Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
What is up, guys? It's Katie Hettenbach, host of Katie Afraidy, and this is another episode, Zoom episode. Woo! We are chatting with the director of Beasts of War. You guys, go watch this movie. It is crazy. It is like a cross between Inglourious Bastards, Saving Private Ryan, and Jaws. What a combo. Exactly. Go watch it. And here's the interview.
Hey, Katie. How you going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Amazing. Well, thanks for chatting with me today.
Thanks for chatting with me. Thanks for taking an interest. I love Fangoria, like, for years, obviously. You know, you guys are legends. So, yeah, it's always good to talk to you guys.
They're the best. They're the best.
Yeah, man. They really are. Yeah.
What was your first experience with Fangoria?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, because I'm a horror filmmaker, it's just kind of always been around, like, back, you know, the printed magazine. Like, I'm kind of that old, so I used to read the magazine. And, I think we've been in the magazine a couple of times. Like, I've got some Fangorias where, like, they did, like, some Wormwood specials and, you know, some creature effects specials and some of the films I've been involved in. But, yeah, way before I was making films, you know, like, obviously Fangoria has been, like, a huge thing for everybody, you know, who likes horror.
I love that. That's amazing. Well, first of all, I should say congrats on the movie.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. It turned out okay. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with this one.
I'd say a little more than okay, but you know, doing great.
Well, it's funny because I was just like, I just sort of went in just going, oh, let's make a shark film, you know, just try not to embarrass yourself in the shadow of Spielberg, you know. But yeah, we came out with something special. Yeah, it was weirdly personal, and you know, we were able to sort of base it very loosely on a true story, so there was like a sort of like a serious reality to that, you know, where we're kind of like, well, you know, this is kind of important because people did go through this, and you know, going into the research for it was pretty amazing. But also, you know, I was sort of reading old war letters from my grandfather who died like in the Pacific and stuff, and so like, yeah, that was kind of personal, and yeah, it was just a really cool journey, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna ask more about how, you know, the inspiration came to me, but you already kind of touched on that a little bit. But also, why add, you know, a shark? What about shark movies attracts you?
Well, my producer and I were talking about doing something based on water, and like, he had access to a tank, you know, so he's like, can you write something with, like, you know, water? And I'm like, well, it's, you know, it's going to be a shark film. Like, it sort of has to be. And, you know, obviously, you know, anybody who's seen Jaws as many times as I have, the USS Indianapolis Beach from Quint is something that every time you watch that movie, you're just like, it's such a good monologue and it's such an amazing story. And Robert Shaw just like, you know, does that monologue so beautifully, you know, talking about, you know, the sharks coming at you with their eyes rolling back and they turn into black eyes, like doll's eyes. You know, he's talking about his mate getting bitten in half and like floating up and down, you know, like in the water, like a top. And I literally stole that for this movie. There's a scene, no, spoiler alert, but yeah, there's a scene where a guy gets bitten in half. And, you know, I was just kind of like, well, like, yeah, if you're going to do a shark movie, like I've just been waiting for somebody to do like a really adventurous Spielbergian kind of Raiders of the Lost Ark version of that. You know, I think, I think Nicolas Cage did a movie based on that, but it was kind of like really serious and bleak. And like, it was like, where's the adventure version of that? And I was just like, well, if nobody's going to do it, like we'll do it. And I knew because we had an indie budget and stuff, and I knew we were going to have to probably shoot in Australia. Like we just couldn't do that version. And I think if we did do that version, you know, a lot of Americans would, you know, get irritated because it's just, you know, it's not really my story to tell. And so I did like 2 minutes of research and found the sort of true to life story of the HMAS Armadale that went out in 1942, and you know, similar circumstances. You know, a lot of soldiers went in the ocean and a lot of them just got munted by sharks. And yeah, it was just a crazy real story. And so when doing the research on that, you know, I sort of realized that they were stuck on this raft and there was sort of debris all in the water, and like they had to find like half of a shattered motorboat and drag that back and like, you know, jerry-rig the motorboat to work. Like they had to fix a motorboat while floating in the middle of the Timor Sea while being eaten by sharks and being strafed by Japanese zeros. And I'm just like, that's quite an amazing thing to have to do.
You need to write, you know, it's already written for you. Like that's
100%. Yeah,
enough. It's horror movies are great, but real life is like, you just write that down and put a camera to it. It's scary enough.
That's a hell of a setup. Yeah. I'm just like, if you can't make a good movie based on that premise, then you shouldn't have a camera in your hands.
You know? Exactly. You should maybe go to a 9-to-5 and just, you know, stick to the computers.
Become an accountant.
Just take a chill pill and maybe take a step back from what you're
doing. That's it.
That's amazing. So you used a mechanical shark.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. What was, you know, the complications with that, but also the decision to use a mechanical shark versus like a CGI?
I like every year there's 10 shark films that are made, and they're all CGI, really. You know what I mean? And you know, no slur on these filmmakers, but I don't like think CGI, particularly when it comes to shark movies, is the way to go. It feels like a bit of a video game shark, and like particularly the water displacement, I just don't think it really looks amazing. Like unless you've got like a $200 million budget and your name's James Cameron, like it's hard to get the water right. Whereas if you've got like a half ton animatronic that's being sort of towed through the water, like all of like, you know, the you feel the weight of the thing. And you know, an animatronic puppet can interact with actors in a way that CGI just can't. And so, yeah, it was very important for this to be a real shark, because I just found that with all the millions of shark movies that are made, there are still shots in Jaws that are just the best shots of a fake shark I've ever seen. You know, some of them don't hold up, and like I think we all know which shots those are, but there's like a couple of shots that are just lodged in my brain. You know, there's that, it's sort of like an above shot of a guy being dragged off like a sort of flotation device. I guess it's an upturned kayak, and you see this like giant one-ton shark sort of float towards his leg, and he gets dragged off the thing. And it doesn't move quickly. It moves like an underwater bus, and you're just like, look at the size of that thing, you know. And also that one, you know, where he's like, he's going, come down here and chum some of this shit, you know what I mean? And then like it bursts up out of the water, and it's so shocking because it's real, you know. And Roy Scheider does that great thing where like he kind of whips his head back into that expression. It's one of my favorite reaction shots of all time in cinema. And of course, that leads into we're going to need a bigger boat. And it's just, yeah, like nobody really, you know, those two shots in particular and the fin dragging through the water, like it just, it's just great. And I wanted, you know, to know what it felt like to sort of create some of those images for myself. And, you know, in order to do that, we had to spend a lot of money. And it took like, I think, 4.5 months in pre-production to just build that thing. And, you know, all of the testing and stuff was such a nightmare. But when it worked, we were all just high-fiving and going, thank God we went down this road and didn't do the cowardly CGI thing, you know?
I'm so with you. I'm with the cowardly CGI. Look, I understand sometimes you gotta use CGI and I get it, but practical is where it's at. It's little, you know, it's each one costs money, but practical, it always just feels more real and it helps the audience really get to the place that you want them to go.
I've no problem with CGI. It just needs to be used right, you know, like, and like if you can see that it's CGI, it's not being used right. Like it should be hidden. Like the best, one of the best filmmakers out there who does a lot of CGI, a lot more than you'd think, is David Fincher. But you can never tell, you know. It's
It's enough.
perfect.
It's and that's when you use it right. But so many people
Yeah.
aren't. But anyways, we could go all day about CGI, but we don't need to keep talking about that. We're good. So, what was your favorite scene that you shot?
I think there's a section in the middle of the film that I like to call the floor is lava section, where he's got to jump from the raft to a piece of debris to a piece of debris to a piece of debris, to try and get to the motorboat to bring that back so that they can, you know, try and use the motorboat to get to freedom or safety. And all the while he's being sort of chased by this shark under the water that's like, you know, trying to get him. And to me, that is like the most dangerous game of the floor is lava you can ever play, you know. And so I like that because there's like a childish, I used to play the floor is lava when I was a kid, and like I saw the sharks or I saw the lava, you know what I mean? Like I really, like I love that game so much. And so there's like a childish glee to that, where I'm sort of reenacting something in a more serious context that I used to do when I was a kid. But I just like the way that we set it up too. Like, I think the shark looks fantastic in that sequence. It's all shot at night, and we've got like this bioluminescence in the water that gives it like, you know, this sort of ghostly, almost science fiction neon green glow to the whole scene. And just the way it's lit and shot with all the fog and the dark, and I had this sort of last minute idea, you know, because it's so dark. I'm like, oh, he should put one of those. They had these sort of safety lights, you know, almost like they almost look like sort of gothic lanterns, you know, that they're holding up trying to see things. And he straps like, you know, a battery lantern to his chest, and so he's got like this light. Lighting coming out of his chest, and he kind of looks like some weird 1940s Iron Man. And to me, the confluence of the way it was filmed and the setup and, you know, the performance and the creature, like I think it all came together for the film in that one. And I'm looking at it going, oh yeah, like I've not seen something that looks like this in any other film, you know. And we're also very visually influenced by, there was a French film called The City of Lost Children, by Jeunet and Caro, that I saw in the 90s that I absolutely adored. And they had like a really beautiful, very sort of glowing green steampunk aesthetic. And that was something I talked to my production designer and my DOP about a lot. And yeah, it's just the influences of that are just really apparent. And it's just really cool. Like it looks like cinematic graphic novel kind of stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty proud of that. I like that scene.
You should be. It was so good. Again, just the whole film, especially on an indie budget, it looks way more. So it's always, I'm always so impressed with indie filmmakers because we are able to use what limited budget we have and make it look like we have way more so that eventually when we do get more money, we know how to use it and stretch that dollar to make it look even better. So.
It's a funny thing with the indie budget. Like one of the reasons why you can do really, really interesting work as an independent filmmaker is the budget's low enough so that you kind of get left alone. And I've sort of done it, you know, like I've had a thing where you do something that's a little bit closer to a studio thing, and man, there's so many checks and balances. Like every time you have an idea, you have to check with 12 people, and then there's 12 bits of feedback, and like it's so hard to just make art, you know. And art is all about risk, and the more money you have, like you know, basically the industry runs on fear and art runs on bravery. And so those two things come together. And if you have too much of one or not enough of the other, like it's a problem. And so, yeah, like you want to find that sweet spot where you know, you've got just enough money to tell your story, but not so much that people get too scared to let you take visual or sort of narrative risks or whatever. Yeah, you don't want to make it too arty, because then you're just making, I mean, who's it for? Like you have to be balancing the commercial with the art, you know. And it's, yeah, it's fun. It's a fun puzzle to try and work out.
And we here love a puzzle. We love a puzzle. So what was the hardest scene to film?
I mean, probably The Floor Is Lava. Like there was just a lot of elements that needed to come together. You know, we were shooting in darkness. Like that was difficult. Like more building the platforms and how do they float, and he's got to jump from this, and then the platform's got to like tip up when the shark jumps on top of it. And yeah, but it was one of those films where it wasn't any particular scene. Like it was all a bit difficult because you're on water and you're dealing with underwater animatronics, and you've got all these stunt divers, and it was all pretty difficult. It's more the pre-production on this one, you know, because we had to build a tank. So there was no indoor studio tank big enough of the kind that we needed in Australia for us to do what we needed to do. You know, they were all kind of 25 meters circumference. We needed like a 40 meter length, you know, to sort of do the set pieces that we needed to do. And so we had to build like a giant 40 meter tank up in Queensland, again on an indie budget. You know, we've never built a giant water tank before. Like there's a lot that goes into that. Yeah, it was like 2 million liters worth of water, and you know, we had to build the shark, and like it just technically this was such a difficult film. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, if you knew how hard it was going to be, would we have done it? I don't know. But sometimes it's nice just to jump in as a bunch of idiots, just having a crack at something for the first time, because you don't know how hard it's going to be. But yeah, the pre-production and the preparation on this film were, it was like just a nightmare, and like so many things went wrong, and we had to pivot so many times, and like the lessons were hard and many. But like once we got on set, this was one of those things where it just felt like, you know, the cinema gods were smiling on us, because it often seemed to just go right. You know, it just went wrong for months, and then suddenly between action and cut, it went right. And so there was a lot of luck involved, I think, with this one.
Again, it's just that it shows in the act in the movie that, you guys took so much care, and in the pre, it's all about the pre, and then during production, you can just go and play and make it happen. And you did that really well.
It is all of that preparation. You're a filmmaker, eh, Katie? I can tell. You just know. You know these things. Yes.
I got
What's
you.
it? I mean, and is it all horror and stuff that you do?
Horror and comedy.
Yeah, horror comedy, man. It's a hard combination to get right, eh? Because if it's too much of one, it gets silly, and then it's not scary. And if it's too much of the other, then yeah, it's
Yeah,
yeah. I love a good horror comedy.
it's the two of my favorite genres, and I love them both separately, but together. There, it's a beautiful mashup, and truly, I think one of the hardest genres to pull off well.
It's funny how similar horror and comedy are. Like the end result is to make the audience make a sound, and you know, one's laughter and one's a scream, but you're still like there's a series of tricks that you need to get to that sound. And it's all kind of smoke and mirrors, you know what I mean? It's like distraction, 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 jump scare. And then comedy is, you know, you think it's going one way and you laugh when it pivots and goes to the other way, you know what I mean? Like, and that's what a punchline is. A punchline and a jump scare, they're kind of the same thing, you know? And that's why so many really brilliant comedians are great filmmakers, like Jordan Peele and, you know, Zach Gregor and stuff. Yeah, it's an easy pivot to go from comedy to horror.
Totally. I say this, and I'm also a comedian. I truly believe that comedians
Oh.
are the best actors because
Yeah.
they understand timing more than any drama training that you could possibly have will not prepare. Like it, you'll be a good actor, but comedians, we just get it more. And everyone should take a comedy class because it's you can't get that training in like serious drama thing.
Do you do stand up?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like to me, that I'm more scared of stand up than I am of sharks. Like I just can't imagine getting up in front of a crowd and like, yeah. I mean, you guys are among the bravest, I think, you know. Well done.
The amount of screenings I've gone to where producers will get up and they'll be like shaking, and
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, because this not everybody is comfortable. You know, this is like the number one fear in the world is public speaking.
Public speaking, yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
I also, fun fact, I have a speech impediment as well. So
I can't tell.
I've hit it pretty well. I've stuttered a couple times, but I've kind of like, you know, what
Yeah.
it. But yeah.
That's, I think a lot of comedians do. Mark Maron had a speech impediment. Yeah, I think that's pretty common. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the thing of I think that we can talk over people finally, and they can't interrupt us. Well, they can, but it's rude.
Well, it's, I think, I mean, I don't know a huge amount about it, but like with a speech impediment, it's like it's about control, right? Like you have to control how you speak, and stand up is the ultimate control. I speak, you listen, you laugh, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of stand ups are actually quite scared people, and they found a way to control the world and not be scared. So, you know, they get up on stage and they've found their power, you know? And it's funny because from the outside you're like, oh my God, it's so brave, and it's actually, yeah. And it's the same with horror filmmakers. Like people are like, oh, horror filmmakers, you know, they must be really sick and twisted. They're like serial killers or something. And I'm like, no. I'm the kid who had to sleep with the light on. Like I'm a scared little anxious kid, and the reason I'm very good at horror is because I understand fear very well, you know.
It all comes back. It goes hand in hand. It's crazy. It's crazy. So, going back to you, every film, every time you do a project, you learn something new as a writer, as a director. What was one thing you took away from this project?
That's a really good question, and I've been thinking about that a lot, you know, because every film, yeah, you learn. I really learned on this one, that if I'm operating artistically and from a writing perspective, from truly who I am and what my instincts are, I'm at my best, you know. And I've made a lot of films now, you know, like I made a few films with my brother, almost kind of that was like a co kind of a thing. But he and I were very much operating from what we wanted to see. And we've had a bad experience where we had producers come in and just produce all over us, and that did not go well. I've had a situation where I've had you know, we're all me and all the producers are all on the same page, but I've had strong producers who have a strong vision. And sometimes a producer with a strong vision can be a dangerous thing because it's like, well, that's kind of my job. I believe, you know, and this is something that I've been working on very much with my producer, Blake Northfield. I've made a couple of films with him, and he's really good because he gets very controlling when it comes to production, which is his job, and that's good. But with creative, he just gets out of the way. You know, he'll give notes, but like he's like he very much believes in my vision. And so particularly with this film, this is very, very much my vision. And it's really nice because, you know, it's sort of out in the world at the moment. It's just coming out, I think, on VOD and like limited in theaters in the US. It came out in Australia yesterday, and we've had a bunch of screenings, and like I'm seeing the critics come in. The critical reviews, and like it's probably the best reviews of my career. And it's just like, oh wow, this is the most me film I've ever made, and it's the best reviews I've ever gotten. And I don't want people to take away from that, oh yeah, you've just got to be like a fascist and just it's all about you and your vision. Like that is not what I'm saying. Like what I'm saying is you need to collaborate with people who believe in your vision and push you to do the best version of your vision, you know, and that's really important because filmmaking is a team sport. Like, it doesn't just come from me. Like, if this film is good, it's not my fault. Like, it's the fault of a lot of people. Like, a lot of really good things came together, the DOP and the costume and the sound design and, you know, the production design and the producer and, you know, all these amazing people who built the tank, you know, like the people who built this shark, formation effects. Like, I mean, so many things have to come together for a film to work. But if you've got somebody at the helm who has like a really distinct and specific vision and everybody believes in that, then you're going to make the best version of whatever you're doing. And so, yeah, it's so important to have the right collaborators, you know, and that's just something I just keep learning again and again and again, you know.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So I have two final things to ask you because we're running out of time.
I'm not sort of fussed about time. Like, honestly, you're the only interview I've got this morning. So, you know, take your time. Don't worry about it.
Perfect. Well, I saw, well, I have two things to add, or actually, no, then I'll do three.
Yeah, as many as you want.
Right? What is your favorite horror movie?
No, it's unanswerable. That's like, what's my favorite food? If, well, I say bolognese, then I'm leaving out chocolate. And if I say chocolate, then I'm leaving out, you know, ice cream. You know what I mean? But I know what you mean. Yeah, look.
When I say favorite movie, for with like in the criteria that I, you know, give to people, because everyone's like, there's so many. If
yes.
you at a hotel and you're watching cable,
yeah,
the movie is on. No matter where it is in that movie, you're gonna sit and you're gonna finish it. You're gonna watch it. What movie is it?
Again, that's a different question too. You know, there are three movies I always go back to for like inspiration, and that's probably Apocalypse Now, Star Wars, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. But then, you know, probably my favorite director is, you know, Scorsese. You know, I've seen Goodfellas like 100 times, you know, and then you've got, you know, like if Shawshank Redemption's on, like I'll always watch that, you know what I mean? That's my comfort food movie, you know. It's probably, it has to be like top five or whatever, you know. Wild at Heart, I love, you know. It's so hard. Like, it's so hard to give you one, you know what I mean?
Oh, it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
And depending on who you're talking to, you want to like, you want to show off a little bit. And because, as someone who went to film school, it was always like when someone asked me what my favorite movie was, and I'm a horror fan, I'd be like, oh, it's The Shining, but it's really Scream. But people would make fun of
Scream is a very, very good movie. Eh? Like, that is a perfect film. Yeah. Like,
school,
and but see, that's the thing. Then there's horror films, and like, so there's the three, and there's, you know, there's The Thing, there's Alien, there's The Exorcist, and there's the Shining, you know, like the, and Jaws, you know, that those are kind of the top six, you know, for me anyway. But Scream is that's a cracking film, eh?
Yeah, and then I would say Troll 2.
I've not seen Troll 2.
It is not related to Troll 1. It's considered one of the worst movies ever made, but it's really not that bad. There are worse.
Right. So it's like The Room of troll movies?
The Room is really bad. Troll 2 is actually better than The Room. They're also not even trolls. They're goblins. Anyway, it's crazy. they live in a town called Nilbog, which is goblin spelled backwards.
Right. And that's not the one with Leonardo DiCaprio. No, that's Critters 2. Or is that Critters 3?
Yeah. There's nobody that is still acting that is in Troll 2.
Troll 2, right. No, I gotta check that out.
Or they get it from their IMDb because they don't want to be known for this movie. So that's always
Evil Dead's a good one too, you know. One of my favorite, like, just crazy, silly sort of low budget films. Like, have you ever seen a film called Bad Taste, Peter Jackson's first film? Wow. Yeah. Go out, watch that. You will love it. He made it over, like, I think it was a 5-year period, like took 4.5 years or 4 years to film. And then like he sort of did post-production for a year or whatever, but he shot it on a 16mm camera with just him and his mates. He did all of the like makeup and special effects himself. And he just shot it in, you know, in and around kind of the town of Wellington where he grew up. He started shooting it when he was like, I think maybe 19 or something. He finished it like it went to Cannes and got like a special screening over there and stuff. And it kickstarted his career, but it is so fun. Like, yeah, we used to like watch that film a lot when we were young. It's really good.
Check that out. I'm gonna check
Yeah.
that. Okay, so what was the first horror movie to scare you? Or not horror movie, because I know that a lot of movies are creepy, even if they're not a horror movie. So childhood trauma.
Yeah, I watched an early version of Dracula that really freaked me out, and I still can't even remember which it was. Like, but I, you know, it was one of those ones where I crept downstairs and watched it from behind the couch when my parents were watching it. They didn't know I was watching, and it's a bit where they go in to dig up the Mina's grave, and then they open up the grave, but she's not in there. And then they kick through the coffin, and underneath the coffin is like it's like a sewer, and they go down in there, and he's got this torch, and then he drops the torch, and it goes out. And then, you know, you see her reflected in the water when he's trying to pick up the torch, and he looks up, and there's this, you know, half dead, you know, or completely dead vampire woman, and that just scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. But the one that really affected me, and I just couldn't get it out of my head, was The Exorcist. I think I watched that too young. I would have been about 12, and because I was raised a Catholic, and you know, my mum was pretty Catholic, like. And she used to say just terrible things like, you know, don't ever say Satan, don't ever say the devil, don't say his name because he appears. And I'm like, don't say that to a 5-year-old, you know what I mean? So I really believe that the devil existed. So when I saw The Exorcist, the idea, you know, and it wasn't something that's like under your bed or in your cupboard or in the shadows. This is something that's already in your head, like the monster's in your brain. And for some reason that really scared the crap out of me, because how can you hide from it if it's inside you? And yeah, that really had an effect on me. That movie was like traumatizing. Great film.
So good. It's I love hearing what scares, like what started like the scaring, because it's so different for everybody. And for me, one of them was Spider-Man with Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin.
Yeah, good performance, though. Yeah.
Terrifying as a kid watching that.
Yeah.
Pee-wee Herman, Large Marge.
I've still not seen the original Pee-wee Herman movie. Yeah, like that's a Tim
Oh
Burton
my
film,
God,
eh?
it's a fever dream. It's so,
I need to watch that.
it's very, Pee Wee's not for everybody, but, and now as an adult, finding that scare is so hard, especially when I'm so numb with watching all these horror movies. I'm just like, I need to feel scared. I need to feel terrified. I want to sleep with the lights on. I want to be scared to walk to my car walking out of the movie theater, but I have not had that yet. But I got close.
Hereditary? Did you watch Hereditary?
I did. I did. I was freaked out by it, but it wasn't. It didn't do. I still think, I truly believe that the scariest movie isn't going to be in theaters for like a wide audience, because movies are for everybody.
Yeah.
I think it has to be like a weird indie movie that like is only playing at a couple fests. That's where you get like the fucked up stuff that's gonna like keep you awake at night. And I just think that's what I need. I don't know, I need something. Like the one movie that freaked me out the most was and it's not a terribly like amazing movie, but Lights Out. Because I'm not afraid of the dark, I'm afraid of what's in the dark.
Yeah. The short that Lights Out was based on is a perfect short film. I screamed when I watched that, like the first time. Like, that's really embarrassing because I'm a fully grown man and I just wasn't expecting it. I was like, oh. I'm like, oh, dude, that's, you got me. You got me. It's a very, very good short film. I mean, I like the film too, but the thing I liked about the short is like it looked like the film looks like a film. The short looked like you're just in somebody's house. You know what I mean? Like that, like that there was no lighting or anything. It was just like it, I think he was filming it with an iPhone. Like it just felt real. You know what I mean? In the same way that Paranormal Activity felt real. That was another one that scared the crap out of me, because like there was no cinema artifice. It just felt real, you know? Did you, and probably the film that disturbed me the most over the last couple of years was I watched a film, and it's not, I'm not even sure if it's a horror film, but it's called The Coffee Table. Have you heard of this?
Heard of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've heard
It's
that's.
about, it's a, I don't even know what, I can't even say what it's about really, because it's so messed up. But yeah, like a guy drops his newborn baby
Oh.
on a coffee table and the baby is beheaded. Spoiler alert. You know, you probably should put a spoiler alert in here. And then he doesn't know what to do. And so he just puts it back in its bassinet and then just pretends like it's sleeping and hides it from the mother. And they have friends round for lunch, and he keeps going, "Don't disturb the baby, it's sleeping." And I just had like, it was like a panic attack for the whole film. When's she going to find out? You know, and I was just like, there is nothing more horrific in this world than that premise.
Yeah, because what do you do? What do you have to tell? Is they're gonna find out eventually, but it's like, do you tell them right away, or are you waiting? Are you are people are gonna automatically point fingers that you're the reason, like you did this on purpose, and
Well,
like.
you just have to kill yourself. And like that's the thing. If you've got a premise where the only excuse me,
Completely be
all
done.
you can do is just kill yourself. And sometimes you watch a film and you watch a horror film and you're like, oh yeah, if I was in that situation, I'd just kill myself. That's when you know you got a good premise. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't go through the natural turn of events. You know, if the result of this thing is that thing, I'd rather die.
Yeah,
That's the perfect horror premise, you know.
human centipede.
Human Centipede is a very good one. Yeah. I mean, Saw too, you know, where they're just like, not Saw 2, but yeah, Saw as well. You know, they've set this thing up where it's like, it's such a horrible thing. You'd probably rather die, you know, like you'd have to saw your own leg off or whatever, you know, and it's a perfect horror premise. Yeah.
It's brutal. It's brutal. It's ugh, ugh. And now I'm thinking about human centipede, so great. Awesome. I get that image for the rest of the day.
But that's why I like horror is like comedy, because you need a premise. You know, and then you need, because and the obvious premise is, oh, I just kill myself, you know, but and then you have to go to the left, you know what I mean? Like, and so you have to have a premise and you have to have a result that people don't expect. So it's very much like stand up, eh?
There's the again, it's all connected.
It's all connected, yeah, it is.
Well, I have one final thing to ask you, and it's the silliest thing of all.
Bring it on.
Silliest thing.
Excuse
And it is a play on the name of my podcast, which is Katie Afraidy.
me.
Do you think audiences will be afraidy or not afraidy of Beast of Work?
I think they'll be afraidy just because people are there's a people have a primal fear of sharks, you know, and like that's why shark movie there's a lot of shark movies because it's a premise that everybody thinks about. I think you're never as vulnerable as you are when you're floating in the ocean and there's like an abyss of darkness below you. You can't run. Humans can only swim slowly. So if, you know, those jaws of death start, you know, floating up towards you from below, there's nothing you can do. You're just going to get your legs chomped, you know. Excuse me, Katie, I've got like horrible man thought at the moment. But yeah, I think they'll be afraidy, but it's also like it's a silly sort of adventure film too. So people are going to have fun. There's also serious aspects because you know we've got it is inspired by a true story. So like you know it's a pretty full on true to life narrative. And also you know we've got this awesome actor Mark Goldsmith playing an Indigenous lead, and you know Australia was pretty racist in the 40s, so like there's kind of some you know some interesting cultural sort of racial thematics that we're dealing with too. So it's quite a mixed bag, you know. You sort of get a little bit of everything with this film, but really, you know, it's about a shark eating people, and that is always a pretty terrifying concept, I think. So hopefully people will be afraidy.
Yeah, that's an, I was afraid. So props to you. And again, congrats on the movie. Where are people able? And I know you said it was on video on demand, but just for everybody, one more time, where can people watch it?
There's a limited cinema run, so it may be in a cinema near you, but if you're in the US, it's on VOD, so you can just go purchase it at wherever you get, you know, the VODs generally. But it's out today. I would love people to have a look at it because the more people that have a look at it, the more likely it is for me to get to do another one. So, yeah.
Yeah, go see the movie. Go watch it, buy it. all the things.
And be afraidy. Be very afraidy.
You'd be so afraid. Well, thank you so much. This was a blast.
Thank you so much. It was so fun chatting with him. Guys, please go get tickets to this movie if you can. Go watch this movie. It is so freaking good. And yeah, we will see you next time. Stay afraidy.